Research shows that we're 90% more likely to achieve a goal if we've communicated that goal to another person.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I am so excited to have my next guest here. I have Tiffany Dufoux, who is the founder and CEO of The Crew, and we're going to talk about The Crew. And as I mentioned, she is the founder and CEO. It is a membership model, a peer coaching service for women looking to accelerate their personal and professional growth. And Tiffany is just this amazing, amazing star. She has many, many accolades under her belt, including Entrepreneurs 100, Powerful Women, as well as Fast Company's League of Extraordinary Women. And she's also served in numerous leadership roles, including the chief leadership officer to Levo, a millennial professional network dedicated to the advancement of young women. And Tiffany is just such a star. I also will drop into talking about her book, which I have right here, called Drop the Ball. And as I was saying to her before we even got on, that I was quite sure that I had read it. It came out in 2017, and I finished it up this weekend. I had not read it, and boy, was I happy to read it. It was so enlightening. I mean, here's somebody who is so accomplished and just so tremendous, and just talking about all these things that she realized about herself and her journey. It was really, really powerful. So she's tirelessly advocating for women in leadership and so positive. Super excited to have you here today, Tiffany.
Thank you, Kara. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for your leadership.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. So I'd love to go back to the beginning. I always try and find out, who was little Tiffany as a young girl? Like, what, I mean, did you know you were going to do all the things? Did you know that you were going to advocate for women's leadership? Did you know you were going to be an entrepreneur, write a book, all of these things? I mean, who was little Tiffany?
No, I didn't know any of those things just 10 years ago. What are you talking about? No, I had a very joyful, happy childhood as a daughter of a minister. I grew up in the church. My parents were from LA, originally from a neighborhood called Watts in LA. And in the 1970s, it was a rough place. It was a rough time, but they knew that there had to be something other than the environment that they were in. My mom in particular, she found out she was pregnant with me when she was 19 years old. And so my dad joined the Army, which is how I came to be from the Pacific Northwest. And they broke a very vicious cycle of poverty and addiction and violence in just one generation based off of that move. And I grew up the product of what I think were probably a number of parenting books. So my parents, for example, felt that affirmations were really important. Every day, my mom would look at me and she would say, as if it was the first time that she had ever told me this, "Tiffany, you're so smart. You're so beautiful.
You're so loved.
And I appreciate it now, of course. By the time you're 12 or 13, it's quite annoying to be told that every day. But in hindsight, I grew up with a very strong sense of myself. Mm-hmm. Everything from the fact that she pretty much let me wear whatever I wanted, which was a really big deal. And thinking about just the time and the environment that I grew up in, I remember feeling that my opinion was important. And that my feelings mattered, which a lot of kids don't necessarily feel when they're growing up. And so I give her a lot of credit for giving me an alternative voice in my head so that when the other voice is like, you can't do this, what are you crazy? That voice of doubt, I have this other counter voice that's like, you're smart, you're beautiful, you're loved, you can do this. But also just for giving me the sense of, what do you mean you're not into what I think or how I feel?
because that's
kind of a big deal.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I'm the oldest of four girls.
Oldest of four and all girls. Wow. That's amazing. You know, what's so interesting hearing you talk. So obviously your dad was in the military and my dad was in the military way before I was born, but he had started a company a brand inside of a large company called Healthy Choice and inside of ConAgra. Anyway, I talk about it in my book, but it's interesting because my mom was never the person that was highlighted as the leader that had all this impact. And yet my mom was the one that was deciding at, you know, age 45 to go into a totally different career, which back in the 70s was just not really done. I mean, she was an art history major and then she just decided she wanted to go into fashion. And my dad was like, wait, what are you doing? But he just let her, he was like, you know, happy wife, happy life. And I think now about the impact and hearing you talk about how your mom spoke to you and the affirmations and things like that. I mean, do you think she was thinking of herself as a leader? And yet that obviously had a really powerful impact, just hearing you remember those things and think about those things this morning.
No, I don't think that she thought of herself as a leader. She thought of herself as doing what was required, you know, doing what needed to be done. I believe she was absolutely a leader. She was what I call a non-paid working mom, because all moms are working moms. Yeah. Some are compensated for our labor and some aren't. And one of the things that's really interesting, I loved your book, by the way. One of the things that I was really taken aback by and thought, wow, if I had had that sooner, I don't know, where would I be today, was just your relentlessness. And there was this whole idea of like breaking parts of your body, like physically being harmed and like getting up and doing the sport again or doing the activity again. That was definitely not Tiffany. Tiffany was the one, as my youngest sister will say, she'll say, Tiffany, you're so boring. You never want to learn a lesson yourself. I was always very happy to sit at the foot of a mentor, a sage, and to follow the roadmap and to follow the instruction manuals and to kind of stay on the straight and narrow. And so that's part of the reason why when you asked about, did I think that I would be a writer? Did I think that I would be an entrepreneur? Did I think, no, I didn't think any of that. I thought that I would do exactly what I was supposed to do, which was to go to college, become an educator, get married, have kids, and like live my life into the sunset. So I so respect and appreciate that at such an early age, you were such a risk taker. Because I think that that's such an important part of our journeys and can accelerate it.
Yeah. Well, part of your journey, I think, is also you're the oldest, right? So there was, you know, the pressure to actually, you know, walk in the straight line so that you could show your siblings that that's how it's done, right?
That's I'm sure. Be responsible. Take care of the other ones. Yes.
Right. I was, you know, the product of a mom and dad that were 40 when they had me. And I had the oldest parents in the block. And my parents were like, just don't embarrass us and don't hurt yourself too badly. And, you know, that was like, and come home by 11. Like you can go to the parties, just come home by 11 and be safe. And it was, I was lucky that I followed, you know, crazy brothers and sisters who, I mean, it wasn't hard to actually shine in that case, because it was, they had been very naughty along the way, which I think helped me to actually be like, oh, you're a good kid. You know, you're actually coming home on time. You're doing all these things. And anyway,
crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy time. So you have a huge, huge interest in wanting to help advanced girls and women. Where do you think that came from?
Well, I would say it's deeper than an interest, Kara. It's my life's work. It's why I get up in the morning. Literally every job I've had, every dollar I've ever donated, every board I sat on, every article I've written, every book I've contributed to or written, every social media post, except for a few ones where I'm just bragging about my kids because I think they're cute, has been focused on this question that I have of how do we harness women and girls' talent and ingenuity for the benefit of all of us? The answer to where did that come from loops back to my mom. When I was 16, my parents got divorced. And all of the, when you talk about your dad, you know, and him being the public-facing leader, mm-hmm. I had an experience in which I discovered that all of the economic, social, political capital, I wouldn't have articulated it that way at 16, that I thought was our family's, I realized was just my dad's. Because he is the one who was college educated. He's the one who worked outside of the home. He was the one who was the beacon in the community. He was the one who had the awards. And unfortunately, my mom, after the divorce, fell back into that very vicious cycle that I mentioned of poverty and addiction and violence with her second husband. So I spent my 20s trying to save my mom. I don't know if you ever tried to save someone in your life, but you will eventually, hopefully, come to the realization that it's impossible to do that because each one of us is the most powerful change agent in our own journey. So I could not save her, but I am so indebted to the fact that she had enough wherewithal to give me everything that a mother could possibly give a child in those first 16 years, that every day I wake up, and I just try to get to as many women as I can to whisper in their ear, you're so smart, you're so beautiful, you're so loved, you can do this. And if there are any women listening right now, that's why I'm talking to Kara right now.
I love that. So you founded The Crew in 2018. So tell us more about your company.
Yes. So The Crew matches circles of women who collaborate to meet their life goals. One of the things that I've done that's actually probably informed most of my journey is just say yes to women who reach out to me. And Kara knows what it's like to be at a point in your career where you get lots of requests. Can I pick your brain? Can I take you to coffee? Can you mentor me? In 2011, I started saying yes to a lot of those requests. I started meeting women at 9, 10, and 11 a.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays because I'm obsessed with listening to our stories. And one of the observations that I've made over the years, there's been many, but the one that led to The Crew is observing that even though we have a lot of people around us, typically we have our family, our friends, our coworkers, women largely perceive their journey, personal, professional, psychologically as a solo endeavor, not a team sport, meaning that many of us, when we have a problem, the first question we'll ask ourselves is, how am I going to solve this problem? When the more important question that we should all be asking is, who's going to help us solve this problem? And it's part of the reason why I encourage everyone to read Undaunted. And it's part of what I posted about was that Kara knew, had in her energy from an early age, that you're not going to get anywhere without other people. Mm-hmm. And learning how to cultivate those relationships is really important. But the reality for a lot of really busy mid-career women is that they don't have the bandwidth to curate a small group of people who can hold you accountable for your success. Research shows that we're 90% more likely to achieve a goal if we've communicated that goal to another person and if we have regular interventions with those people. It's the same reason why something like Weight Watchers works or why AA works. Sure. And so I decided that given that so many women didn't have these peer groups and that I personally had benefited from a crew. I have a group of women who I meet with on a regular basis and they hold me accountable to my ambitions, that I would launch a tech platform to support women in doing that. So the way that The Crew works is that you apply to become a member of The Crew and our algorithm matches you with 7 other women in your time zone. You decide what you want your goals to be. You upload them into a digital tracking tool and your crew holds you accountable digitally and through monthly events that we call gatherings where you each go around and hold one another accountable. So it's just a way to help us each focus on ourselves and have a group of people who care about us, but are more objective and aren't invested in our decision-making the way our friends or family or coworkers might be. Just another nudge, a support to help you on your journey.
I love it. So the goal is really to remind you of these goals. Do they actually give advice as well along the way? I ask this because I'm part of this organization called YPO. And I know that YPO for years has been really about don't give advice, really hold the goal. Because, for example, if somebody gives you advice and you don't take their advice, then that may create this animosity, right? Like, I told her what to do and then she didn't go do it. And so why am I sitting here? So I'm curious, because I've always felt like there was a little bit of that was good that they don't give advice. But then also, I feel like sometimes people do need some direction. But is there a commitment, like when people are giving this direction, that you need to take it? Do you know what I mean? Or will it disrupt the group in some way? I'd love to hear your opinion on it.
I know exactly what you mean. So you can think of, I love that you mentioned YPO. So think of the crew as YPO for the masses. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's for the people who have never heard of YPO, couldn't necessarily be a part of YPO, that it's for the YPO for every woman. We do use a peer inquiry based model of coaching. A YPO also originates and starts with a coaching model, meaning that if you want to help someone, one of the most important things that you can do is keep them at the center of the experience that you're trying to guide them through. Okay. What happens when we're giving advice, and it's a wonderful intentional thing that we do, is we feel empathy towards someone. This happens all the time. When you feel empathy, unless you're a total jerk, you do something that we were taught to do in kindergarten, which is you imagine putting yourself in someone else's shoes. Mm-hmm. Well, when you put yourself in someone else's shoes, you think, well, what would I do if I was in that situation? Or what did I do when I was in that situation? And then you proceed to tell that person about yourself. Unbeknownst to you, you've now made what they're dealing with and their experience about you. So it is true, Kara, that in the crew, we encourage our members to start a crew coaching session with questions, not with advice, for that very reason. Mm-hmm. We encourage open-ended questions. We have a set of them that's in a document that we call the crew playbook. And they're questions like, so what have you done so far to realize this goal? You know, you'd be surprised how many of us are stressed about goals we haven't moved forward, but we've actually done nothing to move them forward. Who else should be involved? What would happen if you asked for exactly what you wanted? One of the most important questions is, what are you going to do between now and the next time we see you? Like, what action are you going to take? We try to get the person to commit. And then finally, the last question speaks to the advice, which is, do you need anything from us? Is there anything that we can do to support you? To which, if the person says, yes, has anybody else written a book? Or has anyone else had to try to figure out how to get their customer acquisition cost lower? Or if anybody, then that is the appropriate time after the advice has been solicited for you to weigh in. And I'm sure that's probably the case with YPO, is they're trying to prevent people from giving unsolicited advice that really is about them and not the person that they're trying to support.
Totally. And it is the right thing. I mean, I was in a group for years. And once you kind of get the hang of it, it's interesting because they found that when people sort of accidentally slipped into that of giving advice, and if the recipient didn't take that advice and go do something, that the group starts to break down. And so there has to be an accountability, which I thought was really fascinating. And once you get into it and sort of see the method, which it sounds like you guys are very, very similar in that sense, that it really, really works. And I love the end of, you know, asking people, offering up, what can we do to help you? Because I think so often people don't want to ask, right? Which I think that's what the crew does too, which is amazing. So these were all groups in person prior to the pandemic, or how did you set them up
Initially. Yes. So I was one of those very stubborn founders with the hypothesis that I felt, we had to stick with, which was the importance of being in person and that real meaningful human relationships had to happen in person. So we initially matched crews in specific markets. Mm-hmm. Of course, one of the challenges from the very beginning is that we ended up with a lot of women applying to the crew in markets where we didn't have a critical mass of other applicants. And those women basically sat on a waiting list for a very long time. When COVID hit, we had no other choice but to move to a virtual model. I had existing crews that needed to hop on a virtual platform. We had new crews we were onboarding that needed to hop on. And that allowed me to do something I had not had the opportunity to do before, which is why this entrepreneurship ride is so incredible, which is to be in a lot of gatherings. Because remember, if they're happening in person and it's happening in San Francisco and I'm in New York, I can't be there.
Sure.
But if we're using Zoom, all of a sudden, I can be in a lot of gatherings. So I spent March of 2020, April of 2020, basically in gatherings every night, on the weekends, and I learned a lot about the crew and about the model. And one of the things I learned was that we had created a lot of friction for really busy women by requiring people to meet in person. Mm-hmm. I noticed on Zoom that women were nursing babies during a gathering that they would have had to get babysitters for. I noticed that the attendance went up. No one was waiting in traffic. No one had to schedule, you know, their time in a different way. I noticed that those questions, those inquiry-based questions, all of a sudden you weren't looking down, you know, or if you had forgotten your crew playbook, it was okay because they could just post those in the chat. I noticed that the timekeeper, so we manage personalities in the crew by using a timekeeper to ensure that everyone kind of opens and ends at a certain cadence and time. And usually if you're in person, only one person, the timekeeper knows how much time is left. And so that person kind of has to jump in and interrupt and say, hey, everybody, we've got 5 minutes left for this session. Well, all of a sudden in Zoom, the timekeeper was empowered to post into the chat, hey, everybody, we've got 8 minutes left. We've got 5 minutes left. And so it allowed the group, the crew, to collectively really support this person in a more meaningful way. So I learned that I was wrong. You can actually support people virtually, that for certainly our demographic of really busy women, that they value not having to be stuck in traffic and connecting. Because remember, these aren't your best friends. So it's the accountability circle that you're meeting with once a month. But I think the biggest thing for me that I'm so happy for, at least the crisis being a catalyst for change, is that we were able to open up the platform. Mm-hmm. Our tagline is every woman needs one. It's the crew. Every woman needs one. And yet where you lived made a difference. And that no longer became the case. We started matching women by time zone instead of city. And now it doesn't matter where you are in the continental U.S., you can apply to the crew and we can get you matched and onboarded.
I love it. So obviously women during this time left the workforce in droves. As I, you know, have said over and over again, they didn't choose to leave the workforce, right? It was definitely a, you know, this is what I've got to do. And especially if you had kids, I mean, people were, you know, forced to deal with online school and caring for children. And oftentimes men were making more money. So if they had one of those in the house, and so it was definitely a, you know, an obvious thing that many people ended up staying home. What do you think is the key thing that people in the crew are thinking about today as they think about what do they do next?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I can tell you exactly, because remember, the whole point of the crew is to realize your life intentions, to make progress on your goals. Right now, those top goals include under career, earning a promotion, or figuring out what the transition is back into the workforce or into entrepreneurship. So a lot of those women said, I have to leave, but I need the flexibility. Maybe I'm going to start my own thing. Or they are looking to earn more money, so they're looking for a salary increase. Under their kind of personal health and wellness, there is finding an exercise routine and sticking with it. It's one of the top goals.
I love that.
Outside, number two is followed by starting a meditation practice. Number three is starting a yoga practice. Oh. Under family, personal relationships, the top goal is being present with my kids, which I think is fascinating because the pandemic created the situation where we were all under one roof. And yet it created a situation in which you felt like you were not as present with them. You know, when you all got up and you all went to school and you all went to work, you were doing your thing. And then when you came back together, you could be present. Whereas now that everyone's under one roof, you feel like you're not able to spend the time with them that you wish. Unfortunately, navigating divorce or separation is another top goal. So these are the things that members of the crew are dealing with. And it was such a, the one thing, our culture is still very similar. I mean, the one thing that didn't change was that women disproportionately bear the responsibility of caregiving. Of household responsibilities. What happened was that the scaffolding that a lot of women had in place to do that, to outsource that, quite frankly, usually to other women, fell apart in the midst of COVID. So it wasn't as if women had more responsibility. Women have always had that responsibility. It's just that we could outsource part of it. We could, and then when COVID happened, all of a sudden we physically had to do all of it. And it became too much for a lot of families.
Yeah, definitely. I feel for many women out there. I've been through a lot, but as I said to my team as well as, you know, people in interviews, that's one thing that I had never been through. My youngest is now 16. So, you know, he was kind of on his own, right? At that, not on his own, but you know what I mean? Like he was in the groove, but God, watching many of our employees deal with, you know, 3 and 4 year olds and 6 year olds. And you know, it's just tough. And it's really hard. And it's hard to, you know, focus on, you know, focusing on goals for your work and then trying to have some kind of sanity and then having a break. I mean, it's a lot. And so I bet those conversations are coming up in these groups as well. So I love that you're thinking about it and talking about it because I think it's something really, really important that we all need to focus a little bit more on. And
absolutely.
Absolutely. So, okay. So Drop the Ball, as I mentioned, your book came out in 2017. Yay! With Tiffany's beautiful picture on the cover. We were just talking about her first edition did not have the picture on it. And I don't know why, because she's so beautiful and it's so nice. And the foreword was by Gloria Steinem too, which is so awesome on so many levels. So talk to me a little bit about the book. So why the title, Drop the Ball?
Yes, I wrote a book called Drop the Ball because I used to be someone who was terrified of ever dropping a ball. I used to think that it was a terrible thing to do. It meant that I was failing to take timely action, that I was irresponsible, that I was disappointing people in my family and my community. It sounds dramatic, but as an African-American woman, that I would be disappointing the entire Black race, as in, if I mess this up, they're never going to hire a Black person again. And so I came to a point in my life where I was no longer able to keep all of the balls beautifully in the air. You know, if you've got enough of an A-type personality and you've got enough of a support, you can keep going. My drop the ball moment was the birth of my first child. That's when things fell apart for me. But in those conversations that I mentioned with women, Kara, it could be anything. It could be that you finally got the promotion and discovered that it's a lot harder to be the boss when you weren't the boss. It could be a diagnosis. It could be that you've got to take care of a family member who has become ill or is incapacitated. It could be a viral pandemic, an economic recession that causes you to come to a point in your life where you can't keep all the balls in the air. And I call them Tiffany's epiphanies. Some people call them aha moments, came when all the balls were on the floor and yet Armageddon never hit, meaning all of the things I was always paranoid would happen. if I ever dropped the ball. They didn't materialize, meaning no one ever called to say, I don't love you anymore, I don't like you, or you're not my friend because I didn't respond to their text message fast enough, or I missed the party, my boss didn't fire me, I never had the police come and read me my Miranda rights, which I always thought would happen if I didn't pay all of those alternate parking tickets that I would get for those orange citations that pile up. I can tell, I live in New York City. I don't know how many of those things you get before they come and arrest you, but it's a lot.
It takes a lot. Yeah.
And they don't actually come. Oh, and so God, I decided to reappropriate the term because I realized that what I really needed to drop was this unrealistic expectation that I should be doing it all to begin with. And the book is really about how I think all of us can get clear about what matters most to us, as opposed to advertisers and all of the other external pressures that we feel, how we can figure out what our highest and best use is to achieving what matters most. So we're not just saying yes to everything that comes over the fence. And then finally, how we engage other people in our lives. Drop the Ball is a bit of a romantic comedy about how I got my husband off the couch because I wanted people to finish it. And I had to, there had to be a little bit of drama and intrigue there. So he was the person that I chose to really focus on, that relationship. But how do you engage your boss? How do you engage your kids? How do you engage anybody in your life so that you can live your purpose and so that they can too?
I love it. But I think the key thing that I got out of the book was it starts with you. Right. And it starts with figuring out, like, what do you need and what are you doing that is limiting you from actually being able to do that? So I really loved it. And it's spurred a lot of thoughts, not only for myself, but also for my kids, too. How do you think your kids have? I feel like you're really conscious about doing some things differently. And how do you think your own kids have learned from maybe your mistakes, but I mean, maybe your realizations and your epiphanies, your Tiffany epiphanies?
My Tiffany's epiphanies. Well, for one, they hold me accountable, right? For me dropping the ball. Today was the first day of school. And, my son's got to get the bus and he's in the 10th grade. And I think I was probably micromanaging a bit too much. And, he's like, Mom, drop the ball. Drop the ball, Mom. I'm in the 10th grade. I will get to the bus on time.
I love it.
Okay, great. So that's one way. But the other way is, I think part of what I call in the book, Delegating with Joy, is really engaging other people in our expectations of ourselves. So one of the things that I do now is every 6 or 7 months, I ask my kids, can you have a meeting? There's two of them amongst yourselves, and then come back and tell me the top three things that you feel like you need from me in order for you to feel like I'm being a good mom. Because we often have a lot in our minds about what we need to do to be a good mom, a good wife, a good worker, a good manager, a good founder, a good CEO, whatever it is, but stopping to ask other people. And I certainly have been engaging my kids in that process is really important. And so they hopefully have learned how to do that for themselves, right? I'm overwhelmed with this history class. Okay, we'll have a conversation with the teacher about what exactly do they need from you, right? What are they expecting from you so that you can bring your level of anxiety down, but also feel like you can deliver for yourself and for everyone around you? I hope. I mean, this is me talking. You should talk to them. There should be a podcast for all the kids of the people that are being interviewed by these podcasts to find out, is this, are they telling the truth?
I love it. No, that's so great. So the crew, how do people find out more about the crew and joining the crew?
Yes, they can go to thecrew.com and it's spelled CRU.com because CREW was taken and I was trying to be creative. So they can go to thecrew.com. They can apply. They can find us on any social media outlet with that handle as well.
Yeah. And you can just see your community on your social platforms. I mean, definitely following and engaged, which is, I think, a great sign of any organization and business. It's definitely clear. So, and Drop the Ball, everybody should pick this book up. It's so good. And also, Tiffany's Epiphanies videos are on YouTube. I had a look at those too. That's lots of fun. So very, very cool stuff going on with Tiffany. And overall, for people to follow you on social, do you want to tell people the best way?
Yes, I'm at TDUFU on every platform.
TDUFU. I love it. Yes. So great. Well, thank you so much, Tiffany, for sharing your incredible insights and knowledge and for letting us get to know you even more. So great. And hear more about the crew and your book and just all these amazing thoughts. It just feels so fortunate to have you on today. And I really, really feel like this is just a great example of just another trailblazer out there that is just doing amazing stuff to enable others to go out and be who they should be, right? And who they can, you know, realize along the way that it doesn't, you don't have to stop when you're 21 years old and decide what you're going to be when you grow up, right? You can definitely reinvent yourself, and the crew and everybody who's involved in that, I think, has really talked about it in that way. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We are here every Monday and Wednesday at the Kara Golden Show. Please give this episode 5 stars, subscribe to the podcast as well, and come visit me on my social platforms at Kara Golden with an I. And hopefully, if you haven't had a chance to get the book, my book, Undaunted, Overcoming Doubts and Doubters, and also it's available on Audible too. I hope you'll get a chance to read it. And of course, if you haven't tried Hint, please pick up a case of that in your local stores or online on Amazon as well. And thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of the week. Thanks again, Tiffany.
Thank you. I was drinking my Hint.
Yay! All right. Thanks, everyone. Before we sign off, I want to talk to you about fear. People like to talk about fearless leaders, but achieving big goals isn't about fearlessness. Successful leaders recognize their fears and decide to deal with them head on in order to move forward. This is where my new book, Undaunted, comes in. This book is designed for anyone who wants to succeed in the face of fear, overcome doubts, and live a little undaunted. Order your copy today at undauntedthebook.com and learn how to look your doubts and doubters in the eye and achieve your dreams. For a limited time, you'll also receive a free case of Hint Water. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Send me a tweet at Kara Golden and let me know. And if you like what you heard, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Thanks for listening.